Hey, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Indie Corner Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I have an awesome guest here. How are you doing, Tommy Faircloth?
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Good. I did pronounce that right. Like, there's no other...
Yeah, that's pretty easy. Faircloth, not Cloud. I get all kind of weird pronunciations.
Do you? Yeah. That's what I was going to ask, because, like... I don't know. I thought it seemed pretty easy and standard.
Yeah, it's not pretentious at all. It's pretty basic.
Right. That's good. And your movies, by the way, are not pretentious at all, you know, no. Which you see a lot in horror, the horror, like indie horror genre or whatever, you know, you see a lot of people who are kind of, they think they're making art when they're not, you know, they're just.
Yeah, my stuff's really, even when I try to be serious, there's a lot of tongue in cheek. I get a lot of my influence from John Waters, and I can't get rid of it no matter how much I try. So,
well, that's good. I honestly don't know if I saw that or not, but in it, interesting.
If you see some of my earlier stuff, there was a lot of influence.
Actually, you know what? I just watched Dollface, and yeah, maybe I can see a little bit, like with the, I guess I don't know. See, I'm afraid to say things these days because everything changes. So you say one thing wrong and then people are like, that's not what you're supposed to say. And so drag queen, is that still appropriate to say these days?
I guess I'll say it. So
yeah, there's three drag queens, I guess, and in Dollface, which I loved. There's so much going on in that movie.
Yeah, Dollface was technically a sequel to my first film called Kremlin Head. And the way I shot it is you didn't have to see or even have heard of, you know, my first film to see it. And so the reason I had the drag queens in it was a throwback to the first film where, you know, all these kids are driving, you know, and there's a hitchhiking drag queen in the film. And they pull over and he's like high and drunk. And it was just a throwback to that. That's the only reason drag queens were in it at all. But ironically enough, because drag queens were in it, that's why the distributor that picked it up, which was Breaking Glass Pictures, because they normally only distribute gay films or dramas. And when they saw that the drag queens were in it, they thought it was something that they could market to their gay audience, you know, as a horror film. And so that ironically, when they contacted me, that was one of the reasons why they wanted it. So
I did not know Breaking Glass mainly did that. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I've never dealt with them, so I can't say, you know, one or the other. But I I just watched it last night for the first time because, you know, to get ready for the show and everything and just to be familiar more with your work, because I've seen A Nun's Curse and I've seen I own both Nun's Curse and Family Possession, you know, which both star Felissa Rose, but it was amazing to see Deborah Shawn,
yeah,
you know, in your earlier work. And we just interviewed her recently and she's such a sweetie.
Yeah.
We're hopefully interviewing Felissa. So it's really kind of cool because like this season of Indie Film Cafe Spotlight, where we interview people have been on who we like, I guess it's more people who've, we've watched their movies or whatever, you know, like kind of thing. I don't know. Like, you know, B movie people and whatnot. And Deborah Shawn was one of them. And I absolutely loved her in this movie.
She's great. She was hilarious. I actually shoot my own films as well. And it was hard for me to actually shoot a lot of her scenes because I would just lose it. You know,
laughing.
I would ruin takes, you know, shaking the camera. So, but she's hilarious. She's really good.
She is one of those people that, was a lot of her stuff like unscripted or was it all of it scripted?
I mean, I pretty much, you know, had it written like I wanted, but I told her, as long as you get the point across, you know, you can say what you want. So every take was something different, you know, everyone. That's why if you have the DVD, there's a lot of outtakes on it, you know, stuff that we didn't use of hers, which is hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I have to get that DVD because right now that seems to be one of the, I mean, of the three, you know, that I have. And you made other films too, but I think mostly shorts or something.
Well, I've only done one short. Well, technically I've done two. But I've done 5 feature films. Before I did Dollface, I did a short called The Cabin, which it was a pretty long short. It was like half an hour, but I'm actually working on a feature length script based on that right now. But originally when I started doing films, you know, I shot on film, like 16mm. So it was way before the digital world existed. So my first film was Crinoline Head. My second one was Generation X. And then between that and Dollface, everything went digital. And so I did The Cabin, a short film, as kind of a test to see, you know, what the medium looked like, what I could do with digital. And it turned out to be a pretty decent short. You know, it played in a lot of film festivals, and it actually played on, it got picked up by Shorts TV. So it was like on a lot of, you know, cable channels and things like that. So it did pretty well. And I've always been interested into, you know, making a feature out of it. So I think that's probably going to be what my next project's going to be when I get around to finishing, you know, the script for it.
Nice. So Crinoline Head was the first, and that was the Dollface original, right? Like that was right. The original thing.
The original title of Dollface was called Dorchester's Revenge. And then the tagline was The Return of Crinoline Head. But of course, you know, that's a huge long title. And, you know, if you didn't see the first film, you know, why would you watch the sequel first? And so, I mean, I agree with the distributor. We needed a shorter title and just something that, you know, they want something that you can say in a second, you know, that'll fit, you know, on all the digital platforms and everything. And so I come up with that name, Dollface, and they liked it and it worked. So, because it is kind of a standalone film. You don't have to see the first movie to enjoy it. So
the first movie was like, I guess, made in 96. Was that what I read?
Yeah, 96, 97-ish. Yes, I think it came out in 97, but we shot 95 and 96.
Wow. So yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, in school, in film school, when I shot that during summer break. Yeah.
See, that's the funniest thing I always hear is that people shoot like a movie during the film, you know, but not like something that like is class, you know, like no, nothing in class. It's just,
well, actually, I did get credit for it because what it was is I wanted to shoot a feature, and you know, it was super expensive to rent, you know, film cameras, you know, back then. And so I signed up for a summer course, and it was called independent study, which basically means you could do anything as long as you got it approved. And so I got it approved that I was going to shoot a film, you know, and that gave me access to all the school's equipment, you know, sound equipment, lighting, you know, cameras, everything. And so me and all my friends, you know, we got together, we got all this equipment, you know, rented a lake house, went and shot the film. Of course, you know, the camera ended up breaking and I had to rent one anyway, but still, you know, I still had access. And so when I finished the film, you know, I got distribution and I also got a grade for it. So it kind of worked out.
So Crinoline Head is available still or no?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. I think you can stream it on Vimeo, I believe.
Oh, wow.
It was originally released on VHS. You know, this was before DVD. So you could get it through Fangoria and things like that, mail order, stuff like that. But I got the original release converted to DVD many years back. So you can still get copies on Amazon and through like my store or Screep Productions website.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's neat. What was the biggest learning thing that you got from like learning experience from working on your first film?
I mean, it was, you know, expect everything to go wrong pretty much. But what I've learned then, which I carry over through all my films, is I shoot really quickly and I shoot all at the same time. I'm not someone that's going to shoot a week here, then wait a month and shoot a week. I can't do that, you know, because people will drop out, you'll lose locations.
Oh, so I know. The main
thing for me is planning, you know, get everything done, you know, within 2 weeks, and I pretty much stuck to that, even with my features now.
2 weeks is a good amount of time. I go crazy when I hear people do it like in 4 days. I'm like, I can't imagine that.
Like, it's almost like a game now to see how quickly I can shoot a film with the least amount of people possible. It's like, you know, like with Nun's Curse, you know, we had a very, very tiny crew. but you know, we were mainly in one location. So it, you know, I mean, it was challenging, but it wasn't like, you know, we're having to go to 10 different locations, you know, in 8 or 9 days. But it's all about planning. As long as you have everything planned out, you know, beforehand and not wait till the last minute, you know, you should be okay.
Was An Nun's Curse the shortest like time you've shot a movie?
A feature? Between that and Crinoline Head, my first film, I shot Nun's Curse. It was either 8 or 9 days. I think it was 9 days because there was a flashback scene in Nun's Curse with the little girl and her father. If you've seen it, was shot about a month before the rest of the film.
And that was Jason Vale, if I'm correct.
Yeah, Jason Vale and the little girl, that whole bedroom scene and her flashbacks of her, you know, going to her closet, having a bed. All that was shot about a month before everything else was shot. So technically it was shot in about 9 days.
Nice.
Yeah.
I always love seeing Jason in your movies, you know,
he's really good.
It's fun to see him pop up.
I wanted him in it. I just said, you know, this particular film, you know, when I was telling him I was, you know, doing this new film, I was just like, you know, I said, it's like, you know, The Breakfast Club. We're all stuck in one location and it's all these kids. I don't have anything for you, but I hadn't finished the script at the time. And that's when I later added the flashback and the girl's father. And so that's he, you know, cause he's been in like my last 4 films that I've done, 5 films really. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So he's been to all of them.
Yeah. I actually directed a short film that him and another girl wrote and produced, and they kind of hired me to shoot and direct it. It's called Anniversary, and he was the star, she was starring, but I don't consider that my film because I didn't write it, you know, I just put it together for him. But yeah, that was technically another short I did.
Well, did you produce it or did you just direct
it? I just shot it. I physically shot it and edited, and then I directed it. Yeah.
Well, still, I mean, I think that's still sort of your, like, you know, your film. I mean,
it's in my work. Yeah, you know? It's just with me. I've always only done my own, you know, stuff that I've written myself, you know, and so it was an experience, you know, because I've always wanted to do that. I mean, I still would like to do that, you know, the feature, kind of be brought in and have nothing to do with, you know, the story whatsoever and just direct it, or, you know, and then walk away and be done with it, you know.
Was that sort of easier for you to do, like be able to direct and then just say, all right, I'll
not really, because I shot it as well. And I was responsible for editing, get it all done. So really it was still kind of as stressful. You know, if I was just, you know, directing it and I was done.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a lot easier, less stressful.
Well, sort of, I mean, but it's still like, I guess, I mean, and especially if you come with a crew that already know, like pretty much everything that there's, you know, need to do. But if you're just directing, it's got to be pretty easy, you know, just go in there, tell them what you want to do, and then do it.
It's always better if you know the director is also the editor, because you're going to know the shots you need. You know, if someone is just in there and does a scene and they have no idea about editing, you know, and then you get going through your footage and you're like, damn, I wish I had a shot of this or that, you would know that if you had an editor's mind when you're directing a film. So that's important to know.
Well, that's why I always like have a DP as an editor, because, you know, I always like to make sure that if I have a DP that is editing the movie, they sort of know in their head how these things are going to be cut, as opposed to me, who I'm not an editor, and I don't claim to be an editor. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, whatever, you know, like some people
they storyboard out like every single shot, you know, scene by scene, and I don't do that. I just kind of break the scene down into shots I know I want to get, you know, and keep a list, just kind of like a shot list. I don't go overboard with the storyboard and everything. Like, I mean, that's just extra time and money that, you know, I can't afford to deal with. But a lot of people do that to make sure it's going to look, you know, how they want it to look, especially with producers. Someone's producing a film, you know, they want to make sure they know in their mind, you know, what it's going to look like when it's put together. And so having someone storyboard the entire film is pretty important for them to see that.
But yeah, but when you're the one producing it too, you don't really have to worry about that. But did you say you shot list?
Yeah, I make a shot list.
Okay.
I make a shot list, you know, of course, once I get on the set and I you know, you're like, I think I want to do a shot like this. You know, you come up with additional ideas, or sometimes you just forget it all together. Like, we're just going to get it this, you know, because of time or whatever, you know, but I always make a shot list just to, because once I'm on a set and I've got so many things going on in my head, if I didn't have the list, I would forget, you know, what I wanted to get. So I've got it in front of me and I mark it off as I do it.
That's very smart. I'm not very good at shot listing. And it's the same way I'm not very, when I write, it's sort of different too, because like when I'm there on the set, you know, it's things change a lot, you know, and what I think I can get doesn't matter. Now I kind of know, generally speaking, you know, you want to start, you know, with, you don't want to start with your close-ups, you know, you want to start with your, God, I can't even think right now.
You want to get your coverage and your
wide. Yeah. You want to get as much coverage as you can. Yeah. You know,
it's
just
better to have too much, definitely, than not enough. And that's one thing I've learned too. Is I shoot way more than what I need, but that's a good thing to have.
Absolutely. I agree. So yeah, that kind of thing is just sort of, you know, the way it is. Like with shot listing, it does sort of let you know, and let your, well, for me, it would let my camera guy know what I want to do. But since you are the camera guy, you know, like it sort of just helps you like look over. Okay. Let's do this. Let's get that done. So I always kind of recommend it if you can or want to. I'm very bad at that just because I like to see things when I start doing it. And then I change my mind, like, you know, every second, you know, I've got ADHD, so, you know, it's crazy on set. So how much more do you have planned out generally when you shoot?
Well, I mean, I pretty much have, you know, it's a year of planning just to get, you know, the locations and make sure people are, you know, there on the days. Because, you know, on Nun's Curse, you know, I paid my actors to be there even on days that they weren't filming scenes, just in case something happens, you know, and you have to switch days because of weather or whatever. Mm-hmm. We went through 2 hurricanes while we were filming. And so some of our outdoor scenes, you know, we had to switch. And so some of my actors that weren't technically going to be working that day, you know, thank God they were there. You know, we had to switch, you know, that around. So planning that out, you know, making sure you account for weather days, like the days that had special effects, you know, making sure those guys were there, had all their stuff. I mean, it's a lot, you know, mm-hmm. to deal with just one person, or, you know, when you're doing it by yourself. But you got a year, you know, I had a year to get it all together. So when you look at it as one thing, yes, a ton, but spread out over a year, you know, you just get on your checklist and make sure everything's ready to go.
So how much of that is scripting, like in that year?
Well, the script is the first thing I do before I even consider shooting, because I have an idea for, you know, for a movie, but my thing is I'm realistic. I don't go write some huge sci-fi type of film that I have no idea where I'm going to shoot it. I like to find locations first. You know, I have an idea, like for Nun's Curse, I had an idea for the story, but I needed to find the location so that I can go in there and plan out my scenes, you know, with what's there. Because originally this story was going to take place in a jail in another part of the state, and it was going to be about actually a warden, not a nun. Oh. And I found this really cool, you know, abandoned jail, and it had like the rooms where you visit. It's got the glass partition, you know, things like that. So I had some good ideas for some scenes and everything with that, but then I lost the location. So I got the film office to help me find another jail. When I found, you know, got this new location, it had this really cool stained glass window in the front of it. And it's actually built in a tower, and the tower is where they used to hang prisoners. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is really cool. And then I did change from a warden to a nun, because, you know, it reminded me of like a, you know, some gothic, you know, church or something. And I just kind of switched up the story. And then once I got to tour the whole location, I could be more specific, you know, with my scenes and plan it out that way. But for me personally, I like to, you know, find locations and just keep them in my back pocket and pull them out for stories and you know, it just makes it more realistic when you can utilize every aspect of the location in your story without having to change it once you're there.
Well, recently I discovered what it's called, like nunsploitation or something, where, you know, just tons of nun movies are getting made these days and everything. And so it's really cool to go to like Walmart and see a Nun's Curse and then see it next to like Bad Nun or Nuns, you know, whatever, you know, like, I'm trying to actually own as many nun movies as I can. So, you know, yours is in my collection. So let's talk a little bit about like, you know, we talked about you working with Debbie Rochon and Felissa Rose. Have there been like scream queens that of the past that you wanted to work with and just haven't had a chance to yet?
Well, I'm really good friends with PJ Souls. I love her. She's super sweet and nice. But I know she has rules where she told me she doesn't want to get killed in a film. That's one of her big rules, and pretty much everyone gets killed in my movies. But I would definitely like to work with her. But someone that I work with in Family Possessions was Mark Patton, who was, you know, in Nightmare on Elm Street 2. And he's someone I've always wanted to work with because I remember, you know, seeing that film when I was in middle school and just thinking, you know, he was the coolest thing ever, because usually, you know, all these final girls were men or women. And, you know, here's Mark. And so, you know, he hadn't done a horror film since Nightmare on Elm Street 2 when I was writing Family Possessions, and I originally reached out to him. And he was like, yeah, you know, that sounds cool. And I was, you know, once I finished the script, I hadn't talked to him for a few months, and I just assumed he probably wouldn't be interested. And he contacted me and was like, you know, asked me how the script was going. So that was cool working with him. And on that film, actually, Felissa and Mark, they weren't in any scenes together, but when they started doing conventions and promoting the film, you know, they become best friends.
Yeah,
I'm working on that. So that was a, you know, kind of a cool thing. But
are you gonna put them in another movie together, like where they actually have scenes?
Well, when I was originally doing Nun's Curse, Mark was insisted, you know, he's like, you should write a mother superior in there and I can play her. And I was like, it's not like that. I said that would be hilarious. Hey,
that would be the John Waters thing to do.
Yeah, that would be the John Waters version. But but I saw Mark a couple weeks ago and he was already, you still got to do that movie with me and Felissa. And I'm like, I know. So
watch out. If you don't do it, somebody else will. So, yeah, that's the problem with indie world these days is people are just like, you know, put you, you know, they'll see a good thing going and they'll be like, you know, try to latch onto that too. But it was really cool. It's really cool to see Mark. I had actually interviewed Mark. He didn't remember this when I spoke to him the other day. It scares that care, but I had interviewed him a while back, briefly, you know, or whatever for one show. But it was nice, you know, he was a really good guy, and I've always respected him as an actor. So I hope he, you know, is in one of your next movies.
Yeah, he's really well spoken. Like if you ever just sit down and listen to him tell a story, because I've interviewed him, I brought him in as a guest at a film festival I do called Crimson Screen, and just like hear him telling his story, you know, like when he moved to New York and started out on Broadway and things like that, just hearing him, I was like, you should do audiobooks, your voice is very soothing and it's really good. But you know, maybe he'll do his own autobiography one day, I don't know,
maybe, who knows. that would be pretty cool. Maybe it'd be called like Jesse's Book or something.
I mean, he's got some great stories. He tells me all kinds of crazy things, you know, like from, you know, back in the day. He's like, yeah, I remember when, I can't even remember, this might not even be the truth. I mean, I might not be telling right, but he'll be like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. once rented a room in my house, and like so-and-so walked Sarah Jessica's Parker's dog, you know, on the week. It was just all these hilarious stories from back in the early 80s, you know, when that whole group that's now, you know, uber famous now, were kind of starting out, and he was kind of right in the middle, you know, with them. And it's just so funny hearing those stories.
Yeah, I interviewed back in Scares That Care, the first year, I interviewed Rubber Rustler, you know? Yeah. And just his stories, you know, but not just from Nightmare on Elm Street 2, but from, you know, Weird Science and, you know, Thrashin', which was what I really wanted to talk to him about. You know, this is one of my favorite 80s movies.
Which, you know, was shot in South Carolina, which I'm obsessed with. I've always been obsessed with it.
Which movie?
Shag.
Oh, yeah.
And Phoebe Cates was in that. That was kind of during that same time frame.
He's so all these guys are out there. You know, I mean, I would love to work with Robert Russler because he was such a nice guy, like just chatting with him. But yeah, money, you know, like that's the thing with these, you know, because they, you know, having those people in your movies does really help, I'm sure, you know, like having Felicia Rose's name, Mark Patton's name, Deborah Shawn's name, you know.
Yeah. On I mean, the it's movie. Fine to have a name too, but it's like it's important to me. That it's not just a name that, I mean, they're good, but that I also click with. That's why, like, whenever I just want to be in my film, like Deborah, I've worked with before, many years ago on a film called Head Shoulder or Dead Shoulder. And so I already knew her. And, you know, I met Felissa a few years before we ever worked together. So it's just important to me that I know they're cool people. You know, they're not going to show up on the set and be miserable and make everybody else miserable. You know, I don't care how big of a name you are. I don't want to work with people like that at all.
I've heard stories, you know, of different people, which sucks because, you know, like that's what you got to be careful, you know, like if you fuck up on a set like that, you know, people talk, you know, and you're, you know,
it's a very small world, very horror community is a very small, tight knit community. Even if you're a guest at a con, you know, and there's some drama, it gets around really fast. So,
yeah, it is. And it's scary. That's, you know, I've known this for years since I've been doing cons, you know, like when was your first convention?
Oh my God. I don't know what my first convention was. Jesus. It may have been like, it was Spooky Empire when it was in Orlando many, many years ago.
Isn't it still in Orlando or is it not?
The last one I went, it was in the Orlando. It moved to a larger location. I thought it moved to Tampa one time, but maybe it came back. I don't know. It may still be in Orlando. But back when I did that short film, like I was talking about earlier, The Cabin, Spooky Empire had a film festival called Freak Show, which is now its own separate, you know, film festival. But The Cabin was played at that fest, and so that was the first time I went to like a horror convention. And that's a huge one. I mean, it's massive. And but yeah, I've been to of course, now I've been to, you know, bazillion since then. But it was kind of overwhelming.
Do you? How was your first experience? Because I'll tell you, man, the first experience I had was at Texas Frightmare. Walking in and just seeing all these celebrities just like already like in the lobby of the hotel. It felt like I told Sid Haig this once when I interviewed him, but I said it felt like Jurassic Park. Like it felt like you're walking in, you're seeing all these things, and you're like, oh my God, there's John Carpenter sitting on the, you know, on the couch getting podcasted. You know, there's Sid Haig and Bill Moseley chatting with each other. You know, then you see Kane Hodder walking down, giving you a death stare. Like it felt like, you know, Jurassic Park. And his response was, the only difference is we can't eat you. You know, it's in our contract.
Yeah. I'm sure it'd been a different experience for me, you know, when I was younger and, you know, watching horror movies growing up, if I went to a convention to see all these people that I looked up to. But when I started going now, you know, I'm there trying to promote, you know, my movies and things. So it was kind of a little bit different, but it was still crazy. Like I can remember, you know, being at a Days of the Dead, you know, we had a table promoting Dollface. I think it was Dollface or either Family, but one of the two. And I remember like across from me was PJ Souls. And then in the corner, one table down from me was Corey Feldman. And then over here to the right are like all these kids from Stranger. And it was kind of weird. It was, you know, like a surreal because of like, I grew up watching these people and like here I am. It was just really strange.
Do you ever give like your DVDs out to like celebrities for them to watch?
No, I mean, I don't, I'm real worried about like, I'm the worst salesman ever, you know, like I'd rather just talk to people than even push anything that I do.
Really?
Yeah, that's why usually when I, you know, come to these events, I'll bring my actors, and, you know, put them up just so they can kind of meet people. Cause I'm just kind of really, you know, like I'll meet someone and known them for a year. And then they'll go, I didn't know you did movies. And I'm like, oh yeah. You know, why did you tell me? I'm like, I just don't talk, you know, I just don't talk about it. I just do it. So
that's good. Like some people are very different on that. Like
I'm not a very good self promoter, but that's not why I do it. I do it because it's, you know, it's fun. And, you know, it's like a creative outlet for me, and I meet a lot of cool people. And it's like me and Felissa, you know, even if we hadn't done films together, it's like we're best friends and like, we can just hang out and be stupid. Like this past month, I've seen her more than I've seen her in the past, you know, 3 years or so.
Well, yeah, you've been, you were at a couple conventions that she was at, I believe, right? You're at like Tampa Bay Screams, if I'm correct.
Yeah, Tampa. They had like a little pop-up a couple weeks ago. And then like we were in Houston Horror Film Festival, Scares of Care. And the one in Tampa was pretty funny because I was just going to hang out. And I ended up being like her table assistant, you know, taking photos for her. And so people would come up to her and they would talk, you know, oh, I saw you in that Nun movie, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, well, here's the director right here.
That's awesome.
I told her, it felt like it was Sunset Boulevard where, you know, I used to direct her movies, but now I'm her butler. And now I work for her, but no, it was fun. You know, it was
your assistant now.
Yeah. I said, now I'm here taking photos for her.
Be careful, man. It didn't end well with that guy in Sunset Boulevard. So he was talking to the audience. So yeah. I don't know, like, what was going on. That's good. Did you go? I have to ask this because you were mentioning this to me before, but did you go to Busch?
Oh, yeah. I went to Busch Gardens on Sunday. Honestly, I was there maybe 2 hours. I'm a big roller coaster nerd, and there was a coaster there that had opened since I've been there, and I needed to get the credit, is what I call it. And literally went there, rode that ride, got some meat left. And then...
Well, which one was it?
That wooden coaster they have called Invader.
Yeah, okay.
It just... And I was with a friend of mine. After she rode it, she got sick anyway. And so we left. And then that night, PJ Souls took me out for Indian dinner. So it was a cool day. You know?
Yeah, it sounds like a cool day to me.
Yeah.
She was really sweet. She was telling me about her family and stuff that was going on.
Yeah, she loves her family and her grandkids. And
yeah.
She reminds me a lot of my mom, you know, and showing me photos on her phone. She goes, oh, I'm sure I'm boring you. I'm like, no.
Yeah, she's really sweet. I don't know if she likes hearing that. She reminds me of her mom, but
she does, which is funny because, you know, she friended my mom on Facebook, and my mom was just, you know, couldn't believe it. Oh my God, PJ Souls friended. I'm like, well, it's because she knows, you know, you're my mom.
Yeah. My parents, well, at least my dad and I always watch, like, Stripes was one of the movies that, you know, we watch all the time, you know. Yeah. Used to have it on like Betamax and all that stuff, you know. And so we'd watch it all the time. But, And so it's really cool just chatting with her, you know, because she's just like such a down to earth woman. You know what I mean? It's not even like.
It's not a big deal to her. She just, you know, talks about it like it's anything.
Right. And, you know, and then you're like looking at her going, oh, my God, you're from, you know, Rock and Roll High School. You're from Halloween, from all these things.
She'll tell you all these stories about, you know, oh, yeah, I was hanging out with, you know, Joy Ramone and blah, 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 you know, back when I was with Dennis. I mean, she's just all these names, and you're just sitting there going, this is crazy, you know?
Yeah, I heard, there's a bunch of funny stories that I've heard from her, you know, and stuff. Don't want to tell her stories, but, let her do that herself, you know? But she's such a sweet, sweet lady, and I just had a fun time chatting with her. Felissa, I've known for a while. Like, we were supposed to work on a project, and it didn't happen, but it might actually be happening. So, you know, things like that. So I was just really happy to chat with her some more in person, you know, because I don't really go to that many conventions these days. And she's at almost every convention.
Yeah. And every convention you go to that she's at, she's going to have a line wrapped around the building because everybody loves her. She just takes her time with everybody, and she's so genuine with everyone, and she makes them feel like, you know, they're the only people there.
And I noticed that.
And it's smart, but she's not doing it to be smart. And that's, people just keep coming back to her every day, every convention. And it's just crazy. Even like celebrities will come over to the table and be like, your table, there's always so many people lined up to see you. And it's like, yeah, you should take notes.
Yeah. You should learn from her.
Yeah.
Is she like that sort of on the set too?
Oh yeah. I mean, the easiest person ever to work with. And we have so much fun. Just crack up. And some of the funniest things ever on Nun's Curse. Because when she was in that makeup, she had to wear those contacts and she couldn't see anything. She was completely blind.
Jesus.
Just some of those scenes, you know, where I'm telling her, you know, there's that really cool scene where she whips around and the stained glass window breaks behind her and she's staring at the camera. But she couldn't see where the camera was. So there were so many takes of her whipping around and she'll be staring at the wall. And I'm like, no. And so
you gotta go over here.
Just cracked. I mean, it was so funny. It was
you'll be like, you gotta go over here. And she'll be like, I don't know where
Helen Keller as the nun, you know.
That's funny. The other one I was thinking of is that she was a Nun's Curse had one of the things that one of the tropes that annoys the crap out of me generally, right? Like generally speaking, I get annoyed, and I don't know, I guess we don't want to spoil anything, right? You don't want to say anything, the ending of the of a Nun's Curse. Okay, if you don't want to hear this, by the way, you can mute for about 30 seconds or so, a minute or whatever, but we're going to be talking about the ending to a Nun's Curse. So the ending to Nun's Curse had a dream sequence, you know, and that usually pisses me off. My co-host for Indie Film Cafe, Paul, will always joke on that with me. They're like, oh no, look, I can see Jonathan getting mad right now. And because I will get beat red. There are some movies where I'm just like that pisses me off. And then I watched that and I actually liked it. I don't know. It worked for that specific movie.
It's kind of like the ending of Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, the original,
right,
where, you know, everything's fine and the mom's waving, all of a sudden she gets pulled through that window in the door that, and you're just like, and that was kind of like the thing with Nun's Curse. It was like, all this shit happened and you're like, it's a dream. But then of course there's, you know, the nun at the end still, you know, in the prison, and people can interpret it, you know, however they want. For me, it just meant that the prison was actually the girl's brain, like that nun's still creeping around in her head. She's probably going to end up killing those people later, type of thing. But
Nun's Curse Part 2.
Yeah. And also, like in the movie, different things that happen, people say, well, it's not realistic that blah, blah, this would happen. I'm like, well, it's all a dream anyway, so it don't matter. So then you can always just write it off.
Yeah, but it's not like, that's sort of a cop out when you come to writing.
When you're shooting it and people want to sit there and debate you on it, it's like, oh, it was a dream anyway, so next.
Yeah, it's just a movie. I mean, at the end of the day, people, I think, get to, especially horror like lovers, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. they tend to over-criticize or
over-analyze. I mean, it had its little underlying, little deep message, you know, about her and her childhood and all that, but it's wrapped around comedy and absurdity and killings and blood. So that's just, again, I can't be serious. I'll try to, but I just can't.
The John Waters in you, man.
It's John Carpenter meets John Waters. It comes through every time.
Jeez, that's an interesting combo right there. The two Johns right there. I honestly, and people are going to get on me about this, but I was never, like, I didn't grow up on horror, you know, necessarily, right? I grew up mainly on comedy. That's why, like, Stripes, you know, Princess Bride, you know, those kind of Ghostbusters, which has a little horror in it, you know, was sort of that and Jaws were sort of things that kind of helped me, you know, become a little bit more. And then watching those shows like Are You Afraid of the Dark and, you know, things like that just kind of helped me get into horror more. But it wasn't really till like Scream or something where I saw like comedy and horror together, you know, that made me go, oh wow, this this is an interesting mix, you know. And then later I became more obsessed with just regular horror or comedy, you know. So I don't know, it's an interesting thing of like, I never grew up on that, but so I never grew up on John Carpenter until much later in life, and I respect and like honor him, you know, but it was just never my thing, you know, growing up. Were you always into horror?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember, I mean, this tells you how old I am. I can literally remember being in the theater seeing Jaws when I was a kid with my parents. And I just remember how scared my dad was. You know, you just have certain little memories that you can remember, even though I was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old. But I remember him freaking out, trying to find me. I was literally sitting next to him. And I just think to this day, that's hilarious. I'll just, makes me laugh when people get scared and jump. And I think that's why I like horror. But like from that to, you know, in the early 80s when there weren't that many channels and you would get like free HBO, you know, for a couple of weeks and they would play the same movie 3 or 4 times a day. And I would see Friday the 13th 3 times a day, or I'd see Halloween, you know, they play those movies. And that, I think that's originally what got me into that, because I liked to be scared and I liked to watch other people, you know, be scared. And then of course the VHS market came out and, you know, the cool that you would judge a movie based on its artwork. You know, how cool is this movie? Look how scary this box looks. And I remember seeing Sleepaway Camp, and then it just completely warped me when I saw that movie. I was like, you know, 10 or 11 years old when I saw this, and I was just so confused. I was like, and but yeah, I just was obsessed with the slasher. And even back then, you know, in middle school, I would write these stories based on, you know, horror movies that, like, I'd write a sequel to Jaws when there wasn't a sequel, or, you know, additional sequels, Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. I was just obsessed. And even in high school, when Nightmare on Elm Street came out, and before there were, you know, Halloween Express and all these places that where you can go in and buy a Freddy glove and a mask, I literally made a Freddy glove out of my mom's steak knives and wore it to school. And like, literally, you would get expelled if you did that today. And I went to school with a knife on my hand.
And they were okay with you doing, like,
yeah, they literally were. I posed in photos with my teachers. And I mean, that was a different time, you know.
I know, that's very dangerous. Jesus,
you could not do that now. I'll be in prison.
No, not at all.
I just remember doing it. That's because I was obsessed with horror. I just loved it. And, you know, I collected all the magazines, and I had Jason on my wall instead of, you know, posters of whatever, cars and things.
Remember back then, nobody, like, everybody, and I didn't live back then. I was the 80s. I was born in 82. So a little later. You know, still even in the 80s, there was like a lot of talk about basically a horror being like warping people's minds, you know, to the point where they were, you know, a serial killer or something, supposedly. Like, you obviously bringing knives to school and everything, and still not being a serial killer, you know, just having a love, as far as I know, you know, right. But you know what I mean? Like, there's that love for horror that most people have, you know, that, yeah. It's just, you know, it's not, you know, we're not dangerous people. We're just people who love dangerous things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and this, you know, the whole thing, I mean, someone that's a serial killer, yeah, they probably like horror films, but I'm sure that's not why they're a serial killer, you know? And another thing that was huge back then was, like, you know, heavy metal music. It's going to make you kill yourself. It's going to make you, you know, that whole thing too, which I was obsessed with, but, you know, it didn't affect me that way at all. My mom, you know, she didn't care. You know, she knew I was all about all these crazy movies. And my sister, you know, would have all these Barbie dolls, and I would make, you know, VHS horror movies with her Barbie dolls, and like, chop their legs off and things like that. She's like, he's just making a movie. You know?
Right. You know, like, that's how people chalk it up, really, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I think I read, like, or heard Quentin Tarantino discuss, like, how he would play the movies with the G.I. Joes, you know?
Yeah.
He'd just do, you know, he would just...
You don't have a cast, so you can control these dolls. And I would, you know, my sister would be my cast, and we would create these horror movies.
Right. I would do that with G.I. Joe's. Just, you know, I would just have G.I. Joe's running around shooting each other or whatever. And that didn't mean that I wanted to pick up a gun and go shoot people, yeah. You know, just meant that I just enjoyed that entertainment.
Sorry, my dogs are in here wrestling. That's all that means.
That's okay. That's okay. I love dogs, and mine would be in here if you weren't in the other room. So, you know, but yeah, you know, it's so funny and so weird, like how people satanic panic, like all of that stuff, like people just thought like people were, you know, and mainly a lot of that has to do with a lot of stuff that was actually happening, you know. Was it Jim Jones and other things that were Charles Manson, things that were actually happening that did sort of scare the world into thinking, okay, you know, more people could be like this, you know. Yeah. But I don't think horror films have anything to do with it. It's all pure entertainment, you know.
Yeah.
But what was the line in Scream? Was like, the movies didn't make us psycho, the movies made psychos more creative. You know, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I totally believe that. I think you can't blame movies for this stuff. You know, you have to blame the people behind it. You know, if somebody's going to go murder somebody, that's on them. Yeah. That's their.
Murderers have been around before.
Yeah.
Like, films were ever created. And so.
Yeah. Not, I'm pretty sure.
It's your head.
Yeah, it's they're fucked up people out there.
Yeah, pretty much.
And if they watch horror films, maybe they'll get an idea or something. But like, right, they might get an idea. They might get an idea from Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, should we stop anything that has to do with, you know, no, that's just ridiculous. But also, we do live in a different time period. Period. Now, like, there's just way too much other stuff going on. It makes horror films a little harder too, you know, at times, because now you gotta like kind of figure out if you're, like I said in the beginning, like just gotta figure out if you're saying something wrong, you know, because things get changed around and you know, you
want to offend somebody.
You don't want to offend somebody because, like, you know, some people don't care about offending people and whatnot, and that's fine. But like, I don't want to offend people just because, you know, I want more people to listen to the show. You know, the more watch the show, and like, I don't want people going, you know, oh, you know, he said that, so I really don't appreciate that comment. That person.
I was like in Dollface, some of Debbie's lines were like, you think we should, you know, she should say that? And I'm like, yeah, because I don't care. I think it's hilarious, you know. And that's how, I mean, it was borderline. It might have been offensive as what she said, but not offensive to a group of people, you know. So that's where, right, I kind of draw the line. I'm like, you know, but yeah.
Well, I mean, and it wasn't like, because she was never saying stuff like, she never said like the N-word or anything too offensive like that. You know, like you said, to a group of people, she was saying offensive things that were just sort of
about
funny.
Body parts and herself. And, you know.
Yeah, I almost like, when I was taken aback when he said the line like to her about her being basically older, you know, and everything, and I was just like, dude, you're digging yourself a hole, man, get out. You know,
he's and like, what was he saying? He's like, something about, I've never been with a
older woman,
older before. Person and older she's
woman. She was like, what do
like
you
my
mean?
Mom's age, yeah,
like he's my like, mom's age. And she was like, and then he then had like a line that was perfect for him to like get out of that. Yeah. Like, I forgot what it was exactly, but it was something to the effect of like, you know, oh, but you know, I still, you know, still like you kind of thing. And, you know, like he was just, that worked really well. Cause I honestly, I don't know. There's some characters that you were supposed to hate, you know, there. Obviously Deborah Shawn's character is supposed to like because she's so funny and goofy.
Yeah.
But then there was obviously the Janet character. You're supposed to hate, you know. And her I guess her like that stuff was, see, I don't know. Would people make this stuff anymore? Like, I mean, some people might be offended by, you know, that kind of crap, but I don't care. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, it was always funny. seeing that like with a crowd of people that had no idea what they were watching. So
yeah, they're like cringing and
yeah.
So have you gotten a lot of feedback now that these films are on like Tubi?
A lot of feedback from
like audience members that maybe you've never.
I mean, I've gotten tons of feedback just from, you know, when they were released, and you know, it's always cool to meet somebody that, you know, enjoyed it. I remember when Dollface was on Hulu, we were at a convention and some guy came up to me and he was like, "I saw Dollface. That's the best horror film on Hulu right now." You know, thanks. You know, it was crazy hearing
that. That's awesome.
You know, but I love hearing stuff, you know, because even if it's just one person that gets, you know, certain scenes, that it's worth it. So.
Yeah, and you said Breaking Glass put that one out, or did they put out the, okay.
They put that out.
And that's awesome. Like, I mean, that's the wonderful thing now is that we live in the digital age. So, I mean, it's nicer if people pick up the DVDs, and I am going to buy it. I'm going to buy it on DVD. But it's also really nice that people have, because I'm not going to lie. What I'll do is I might buy the DVD, but most likely I'll watch the streaming, you know, because unless I can't, like, unless it's gone from streaming or something and I can't watch it anymore, but like it's just easier, you know, and DVDs can mess up or have traffic, you know, tracking issues, whatever, you know, like skipping issues and stuff that, you know, I'm tired of, like, you know, until they make like an indestructible disc, you know, we're always going to have that problem, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I like having, you know, physical media, but mainly, like I was saying, there's usually extras, you know, you can't get on, you know, you watch it on TV. I like the, you know, the behind the scenes stuff and the interviews. I like all that stuff too. But, you know, when Walmart is just like a huge, it's probably like one of the only places that, you know, pick up, you know, physical media now. And when Nun's Curse came out, you know, it was like right in the middle of the pandemic. And honestly, I think that helped, you know, because people would go to Walmart pretty much and that's it. Mm-hmm. And they would buy up everything in sight, you know, to watch at home. So they released it on DVD, I think, before it was really streaming everywhere, which was kind of smart, you know, on the distributor's end, because everybody bought up all the DVDs. And then once it was on streaming, you know, it was on Amazon Prime and Fandango. And now, you know, we're in Tubi, and there's something else that's just got put on now. Like, I guess, I forgot what it was. Like, IMDb's got some new streaming service now.
Oh, well, yeah. IMDb TV or something.
Something. My distributor was just telling me about, you know, that's on there, going on there now, next. And so, you know, it's done really well, but, you know, it's always cool just to actually be able to go into a store and like see it, you know, on the shelf. And that's just something cool to see. I like to be able to walk in there and actually buy my movie.
I agree. And it's better that they put it out in the video store, you know, in the Walmart or whatever before they do the streaming, because I had this incident at Scares I Care 1 year. I had my movie in the theater, you know, being played, and then we're selling copies, you know, of it out there, you know, at our table. And so these people said, "Oh, I stopped by and saw your movie, you know." And I was like, "Oh, did you like it?" "Oh, yeah, it was great, you know, it was blah blah blah, right?" I was like, "Oh, do you want a copy?" "No, I watched it."
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, fuck.
That's another thing, you know, honestly. The people that buy movies in Walmart, I mean, 95% of them, they're the type of person that's probably what they do. They don't stream movies or use, you know, Amazon Prime. These people that pick them, they're kind of like impulse. I mean, my distributor even said, they're kind of like impulse buys, honestly. $10 for a movie, yeah, sure, I'll get it. If it sucks, who cares? You know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that religiously stream everything, you know, that only have Hulu and only have Amazon Prime, of course they're never going to buy it. So it's good to cover, you know, all your bases in that.
Well, I have this feeling, and I don't know when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen, but there's going to be like a different thing with streaming, because right now indie filmmakers don't really get much from streaming, you know, or distributors, period, don't get much from the streaming. It's like a few cents you know, an hour or whatever it is, you know, something like that. And that's like, that's nearly not enough. You know what I mean? So I feel like things are going to start changing at some point, because sadly, because theaters are going to sort of, you know, start kind of losing it. You know, they're already not doing well in the box offices. Things are just sort of going badly for theaters, which sucks, because I do love going to the theater, you know, or like big movies, like big Marvel movies or DC movies or something, you know. But it just feels like things are just kind of changing or evolving or whatever, and going more towards streaming. And thankfully physical media is still here, you know.
So who knows.
Do you have a big huge collection of like DVDs yourself?
I mean, I wouldn't call it a collection. I mean, I have a ton of movies. Honestly, I have like CD binders that are about this thick.
And so that's how you do it?
I keep them. Yeah. You know,
you don't keep the cases. You have to
adjust them up.
If you notice behind me, that's some of my
I have movies. A few cases, you know, that like, you know, TV series and things like that, are collectible ones, you know, that I, most of the time I just slide the disc in and go on about, throw it away.
You throw away the cover?
Yeah.
I just can't do that, because like the
I mean, unless it's like a Friends, you know, movie, or you know, it's like a collectible to me.
Yeah, like you can get it signed or something.
Or some any movie, or I'm just keeping the disc, you know.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's understandable. I'm completely different. I love to keep the cases. I don't know why. I do. There's some movies that I can't find the cases for or something, you know, or whatever. But aside from that, you know, generally speaking, I like to keep the cases, because, you know, I like to have them. But I'm more leaning, even though it's easier to buy DVDs, I'm more trying to get Blu-rays, you know. I'm trying to collect those now, or 4Ks or whatever's next, 8K, 12K. 25,000K, whatever, you know, becomes the next thing. But, you know, trying to keep it like that. So is there anything that you wanted to like let people know about, like projects that were coming up or stuff that's going on in your life that you just want to let people know?
No, I mean, we're just still, you know, pushing a nun's curse. It's doing well for us. And we did get some really cool action figures made. You know, Sister Monday, I got Felicia to sign some, and I think we're going to do, we only got 13 made, and I think we're going to put some up for auction on the website and like give it to a cancer charity, you know.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Just do some things like that. But, you know, just kind of taking it easy, you know, working on some scripts and things like that. No big rush, you know, having a good time, going to these horror conventions that are starting back up again. And just, that's about it.
Enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
Do you feel like COVID kind of helped with that a little bit of like, realizing sort of, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like some people, I feel like they were like, things were going and they're
took a lot of stuff for granted, you know,
having
everything shut down. Yeah. I mean, it could be, you know, cause you know, everyone's just so happy to get back and do things again. But I mean, that might change again too, with, you know, all the crap that's going on now, but honestly, I mean, I was just glad to get out again. That's for sure.
Just go out and go to Virginia. And it's so strange, like being at Busch Gardens, like without masks, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
that was the first park I've been to, you know, since I couldn't tell you when, but I'm wanting to go to, you know, Disney, but they started the mask thing back. I just want to wait till all that's done to go and enjoy it. Cause you know, I don't want to walk around a park with a mask on. I mean, I get why you have to, but I'm not interested in going until that's all done there.
Yeah, you got to come back up to, Busch Gardens during October for Hallow's Scream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, those things are...
I'm actually going to Cedar Point next weekend.
Oh, cool.
Which is in Ohio. But we know, as far as I know, there's no mask mandate for that park, you know, but that should be fun. I like that park.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I feel like the mask thing... It's understandable, but it's sort of annoying, you know, in the same sense of like, it's really hard. I mean, at Scares I Care, it was hard, but it was understandable.
Yeah, and it was kind of a last minute thing too, because originally it wasn't, and then they changed it. But then I noticed during, people were just relaxed. You know, some people were, some people weren't. You know, it was
yeah. I mean, they were trying to keep it like. Yeah,
I mean, like it was like the email said. You know, these people are, or this fest convention. You know, is. You know, giving, you know, funds to these people that are fighting for their lives with cancers and burns and things, and they can't exactly not have a mask mandate.
Right. It's kind of messed up for them to say, yeah. Oh, well, we're giving money to people.
Yeah, and then we're also care. Yeah. So
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's, I get that.
And, you know, apparently CDC, you know, like recommended it or something, you know, or was enforcing it. I don't know. All I know is I'm hoping I'll be there next year, hopefully having a table. But until then, you know, I mean, I'm excited about it. You know, I'm like excited to be a part of it still. Okay. I've never missed one yet. And so, because I live like 10 minutes away, so there's no reason to miss it, you know, or whatever. But anyway, it was really nice chatting with you, dude. And
thank you.
I can't wait to see the next movie that you do.
All right, I appreciate it.
Like you. I said, I'm gonna buy Dollface on DVD at some point. Because I got the other ones, man. I gotta have like a collection. Yeah. And I don't have I gotta get the other ones too as well, you know.
Yeah.
The first two that you made. But I will. It'll happen. And I'll have all your
all right. movies.
So thank you so much, and I hope you have a fantastic rest of your week.
All right, thank you.
All right, have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.